So my name is Mark Thrun. I am the director of the Denver Metro Health STD Clinic, as well as the Denver Prevention Training Center. I'm going to talk very briefly about a prevention training center project that we were involved in that was not research intended. It was educational in purpose, and so the data quality will reflect that as I'll get to it. And interestingly, it's a nice complement to what Dr. Seth just presented, in that I'm going to talk about STD screening in HIV settings as opposed to HIV screening in STD settings. And so a little bit of the opposite of what you just heard. I don't know that I need to tell anyone in this crowd why it's important to screen for STDs in HIV settings, and so we'll skip over that. The goal of the funding from the CDC to about a half dozen training centers over the course of the last couple of years was to really focus on non-genital STD screening, particularly in MSM who are HIV infected, seeking care in HIV clinic settings. And so we each developed our own sort of pilot projects with different methodologies in trying to increase STD screening in those HIV settings. In our case, we identified 8 clinics, 2 in Denver and 6 in Texas, which just happens to be a higher morbidity state under which CDC asked us to serve. We built relationships with 8 HIV clinics. We did a fair amount of assessment work. We developed a brief training and then asked clinics to follow up with some data, which I'll present to you in a second. One of the most important things that we did, though, was really build relationships with these clinics. We used health department data to help guide that. We went to the health department both in Colorado and in Texas and asked them to tell us where STD is currently being diagnosed and which of these settings are HIV clinic settings, so that we had someone, so that we knew that we were seeing and serving a population of fairly high volume. We also used contacts, significantly more appropriately in Texas, to sort of figure out where are the larger HIV clinics, what are the clinics that are actually serving MSM, and who, very importantly, within those clinics might be interested in STD screening that we might create and turn into a champion that might help advance our cause within those clinics. We actually just emailed and cold called some of those folks and ended up building relationships with at least one champion in each of the clinic. That champion then served as sort of the facilitator for pulling data for us, for scheduling our training, to making sure other providers sort of bought into the fact that we as an outsider were coming in to provide training in their clinical setting. They also served as sort of the local resource, so if there was questions about internal processes, they were the ones that everyone knew to go to. We asked everyone to pull baseline STD screening data in their HIV-infected clinics, and I'll show a little bit of that in a second. We then also implemented a clinic-level survey that administrators of the champion filled out around what were they doing already around sexual health and STD screening in that setting. And then a provider survey, and mostly this was not to gather data as opposed to being a push-pull, prompting people to think about sexual health. We sent a survey to all the providers that saw patients within each of the clinics, asking them about sexual health and STD screening. And again, mostly that was just to get them to internalize how much or think about how much STD screening was going on. There happened to be a very fortuitous summit in Texas. The state health department also had interest in expanding non-nucleic acid amplification, non-genital NAT testing in MSM populations at the time. So they actually convened a large number of HIV care providers with laboratorians as well as state health department officials. It was and STD officials. It was very fortuitous. We had the opportunity to actually discuss processes across the state and what the state health department could do to help facilitate this. And then we provided face-to-face training. The Denver Prevention Training Center is a training center after all. And so we went down and we did in each of the different clinical settings, we presented a one-hour presentation. Mostly this was to reflect back to them their own data. By this point, we had their own data on STD screening, reflected that back, presented a little bit on the local epidemiology of STDs, particularly in people living with HIV, presented any non-genital data that the state might happen to have or the local jurisdictions might happen to have, and then we talked a little bit about the processes by which they might implement non-genital screening. And then we provided ongoing technical assistance. Mostly that was email, sort of how do we think about this, what's the conversation we could have with our lab, how do we do this, what exactly is it that you say to people when you test positive. And then we provided some clinical consultation when people did test positive on sort of an ad hoc basis. So what happened? People liked us, which is sort of uniform oftentimes when we give training, which I think none of us would probably be funded if people didn't like us. Unfortunately, this is really almost all we've ever collected, is that people like us, and not very meaningful, I don't think, to our to Congress, who funds all of us. And so, indeed, people found the information useful and relevant and helpful. There were knowledge gains. We consistently demonstrate these across our trainings. And people intended to change practice. But, of course, that's not the big bang for the buck. What we want to know is what happened. I'm going to present data from 6 of the clinics that we happen to have full data sets back on. So pre-intervention, only 2 of the 6 actually had the capacity to do non-genital screening. 2 of the clinics actually used many of the tools and us serving as facilitators to actually get their labs to validate non-genital screening for gonorrhea and chlamydia, which was fantastic. One is actually actively working on that now, one of the sites in Denver, and then one in Texas still does not yet have the capacity, but has, I think, made some headway in having discussions with their lab about validating. So these were the number of patients that were screened by clinic, and then the total, the blue bar is pre-intervention, the post bar the red bar is post-intervention. A lot of the numbers were driven by one clinic, and so this was the number of unique patients that were screened pre and post. There was obviously an increase in the number of patients that were screened. This includes urethral screening as well as non-genital screening. There was at least one site that was not able to distinguish, based on their ability to pull lab data, by site. And so because, though, this was so driven by site D, I wanted to look at it in a little bit different manner. And so this is a little bit different. Gonorrhea and chlamydia are on the left, are in the blue bars, and syphilis in the red bars. This is the percentage change in the number of unique patients that were screened following the intervention by clinic. And so we had clinics look at a year before we intervened and then the year after we intervened. And then we had to extrapolate out for a couple of clinics that only had 9 months worth of data because this project's still ongoing. And you see, actually, when we look by clinic site, the percentage change for gonorrhea and chlamydia screening went up dramatically. That was our focus. That was our intent. And so we are happy to see that. And again, you can see it was the site D. Their screening went up, and they had such large volume that indeed that was significant. The important thing, though, would be to look at the denominator of patients, look at the overall denominator of patients that are being served, and then looking at the penetration of screening. We tried to do that, and there's a big data flaw that retrospectively, and I'll talk about in a second, we should have thought about going forward as we planned this. But unfortunately, we didn't. So unfortunately, we don't have the denominator for all the clinic sites. There's 2 clinics that we didn't have denominator data. And then it got really confusing for the sites to pull data. You know, if somebody was screened in 3 different anatomic sites, is that 3 unique patients? But of course, it's not 3 unique patients. Oops. It's 1 patient with 3 screening. And so the data got really messy, and I didn't even think to present the GC and chlamydia data after manipulating it in multiple different ways. And so, going forward, that's something that obviously we'd want as training centers, as we're looking more towards evaluating outcomes, we need to be very thoughtful about the data that we're asking for up front. But this is screening for syphilis data, and this was where we did, in those 4 settings, look at the denominator of overall patients served during that time period and the proportion that were being screened. And indeed, we did see percentage changes. There were more people in most of the clinics that actually were being screened for syphilis post-intervention. And so we think we did something relative to the baseline of denominator of patients that were being seen in these clinical settings. Importantly, and this is the last slide, that last data slide then, this was the non-genital screening. And so we had, this is just the number of tests that were performed in the 3 clinic sites that were able to report that, and obviously it went up. Pre in blue and post intervention in red. This was just one clinic's experience, which was sort of, they were all excited to see the local data drove a lot. I've already talked about our data quality, and indeed as we move forward in educational programs, we need to think a little bit more like researchers as opposed to trainers. And then the lessons learned, training and technical assistance, we think can actually improve outcomes. We've just never been really asked very often to measure them, and we should be. And we have been in our most recent RFA, in fact. They can improve actual provider practice. It was very helpful to have local data and a local champion, though. When you give data to providers and then compare it to national guidelines and they don't compare, providers want to do something about it. Our clinic champions went on to become regional champions, and then I just want to say thank you to my colleagues, and then the clinic directors are our champions within the six clinics that I presented. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. That was very interesting. Are there questions from the audience? Back here, we have time.
So we have data on barriers. I just didn't have time to present it, and it was less interesting because you all know those barriers. The labs weren't able to do the test because it's not locally validated. There's attitudinal difference. There's many providers that think they're doing a fabulous job, and then you show them their data where they screen 85% of their patients for syphilis and only 20% of their patients for GC and chlamydia. And like, oh, maybe we're not. I mean, that was the biggest point of this project, was to be able to show them that data. Interestingly, though, in all of our surveys, we did not get any, you know, people living with HIV are breaking the law by having sex. I think that most HIV providers are probably beyond that at this point. And so we didn't, but maybe those people that think that just didn't happen to respond to our survey. So we do know the barriers, and I think we need to think thoughtfully about how we help to get individual clinical settings around the barriers. For each of the different clinics, we use different, some just needed the data presented to them, and then they grasped on to this is really important. Indeed, we should be doing better at screening for GC and chlamydia. Others really needed more technical assistance, and how do you talk to a lab, and how do we get the lab to do this, and how do we do this without any funding, and can the CDC help, and where do we get positive specimens to validate the test? And so I think the points that we took home is that coming up with a national training plan is lovely. Coming up with a national training plan that really focuses on individual level clinics is much more important, and we need to address those individual level barriers. And we did it at the clinic level, not necessarily at the provider level, where there may be some attitudinal things that we didn't fully uncover.
Another question.
So quickly, on the slide for syphilis, where you had one of the sites showed a 30% improvement and then one of them 8%, but like the other three were really, really low. One was negative. Why do you think we're successful with one, but almost all the other sites weren't as successful?
So I know the different clinics that are represented by the letters, and I can talk about there was a clear difference in enthusiasm. I mean, I think what's really important is to find that local champion who can really say this is what we're going to do. That local champion has to have authority within that clinical setting that can say not only is this important, but I also have the ability to be able to ask all the rest of the providers. I'm in a position of authority where I can ask all the providers to do this and really truly embrace it. I don't want to say that the rest of the clinics did not embrace sexual health. I think all of them did very readily. But there was certainly different qualitative differences between the different clinics with regard to their. I'll also say that part of this, of course, is driven just by the absolute number of denominator of patients that they're serving, that if you have a smaller clinic that's seeing a smaller number of patients, you're going to see a larger change than a bigger clinic that you know, you might be doing thousands more tests, but because you're already seeing thousands of patients, that's going to reflect, it's going to look like it's a smaller percent change.
Thank you. I think we have to move on now.